Before I forget, Bruce, there's a couple little side questions I wanted to ask you that aren't directly related to this, but I'm doing a module based on the idea that, at the risk of leading the witness, that sound quality matters, and talking about the things that contribute to sound quality on a technical level as far as codecs and sample rates and stuff like that, and addressing the different steps of the chain and all that. And some people might be of the opinion that sound quality doesn't matter so much because at the end of the day, it's going to be MP3s and it's going to be on a laptop or a cell phone. And so I wonder if I might get a couple quotes from you in terms of the importance of sound quality or the unimportance of sound quality in some situations.
Yeah, sure. And in fact, I'm going through a negotiation with an artist right now on that very subject of, you know, we're collaborating on a project and we're trying to hash out what's going to work for both of us in terms of the quality of the recording, because, you know, he's got a very minimal Pro Tools setup that, by the very nature of his, you know, the fact that he's using an M-Box for input-output, to me, that's a deal killer right off the top, because I know that even if I was to loan him, you know, my best microphone and my best preamp and my best compressor, it's still going to be read through that converter, and that's going to wreck it for me. Because, and where I'm leading is, for me, sound quality is absolutely important always. And the thing that I've figured out to try to help people understand where I'm coming from is, you know, and it shows I'm an old timer at this point, but let's just say that you were to record all of your images onto cassette to start with. For instance, an 8-track cassette, which most people probably don't even know what that is anymore. But let's just say that you were to limit yourself to 128 kilobits per second MP3, and that every image you record is at that resolution. And then you mix all those together and output your mix at 128 kilobits per second. My point of view is that if you start with low resolution and then add low resolution together, you get even lower resolution. And so knowing that, like, to be honest with you, for me, it's always disappointing, you know, and this, everything is changing so fast, it's really hard to put your finger on exactly what example to use. But let's just say that CD quality is the benchmark for high resolution in digital audio. I always am sad when it comes down to bouncing out the final mix at a rate under the high resolution rate that I like to work at, which is either 88.2 or 96, because I can hear the difference when it goes down to 44.1. And so it's the same thing. If you combine lower resolution images, then the resulting image is lower resolution. And for me, this dates way back to when I was working with 4-track analog, because when we used to have to bounce tracks in order to get more than 4 tracks worth of space, the resulting loss in resolution, gain in noise floor, was always so disappointing. And even when I was working in professional analog studios, when you were comping tracks and having to transfer from one analog track to another analog track, you always picked up noise floor, you always lost resolution. So yeah, it's a super important thing to me. I fight for it. I wish the entire world was high resolution. It's not. So the second best thing that you can do is, and at least in my humble opinion, is to always aspire for the highest resolution and only dumb it down when there's no other choice.
So how does sound quality play into the emotional side of the music? And for students that haven't really trained their ears to be acutely aware of the different parameters and elements that contribute to the sound quality, what should they listen to?
Yeah, a great experiment for anybody. You know, back in the old days, I would have suggested that you take an image, a well-recorded image on an analog machine, and then just re-record it 10 times and see what happens. My suggestion in this day and age would be to take a high-resolution audio file and bounce it out at progressively lower resolution so that you can literally create a pathway from high resolution to low resolution. And like go all the way down to 8-bit. You know what I'm saying? Just really, really, really crunch it up. And that's all the explanation that you would need.
So if you had to put into words, when you're listening back to these different example files of varying resolution, what do these sound like to you?
For me, it's all about intimacy and the ability to be carried away by the sound. Now, I realize that, you know, for someone with different sensibilities than me, let's say that you grew up in the punk era and that shouting into a microphone that was not designed to be shouted into, and distorting the microphone itself, distorting the preamp, distorting the compression that goes behind it, and then printing it hotter than the equipment was designed to have it printed as an effect. That's an artistic statement, and it's a valid one. And in fact, I do aspire for low resolution and distortion on certain projects. But in my heart of hearts, I am definitely, you know, unabashedly a hi-fi, high-resolution aficionado. I love the sound of high resolution. And again, for me, what it means is intimacy, immediacy, the ability to hear the music and not be distracted by artifacts that come between the experience of hearing the music and hearing the recording. You know, part of it is having an understanding of what musical instruments actually sound like in free air.
Yes.
You know, the acoustic experience. And if you know what it sounds like to hear a brilliantly played, wonderfully constructed instrument in a beautiful acoustic environment, that's the benchmark.
That's the holy grail.
It is. But I'm not saying that that's the way recordings sound, because they really don't.
Right.
The best recording is, at the risk of being long-winded, you know, it's like, okay, so you plug, you know, you dig up some copper out of the earth and you form it into really thin strands and you stick a whirling magnetically induced, you stick a magnet inside a coil and drop it into the middle of a riverbed and hook that thinly produced strand of copper wire to it and create electricity, and you plug that into boxes from cut down trees with pieces of metal and plastic and magnets and such, you know, stretched over the surface of the box and hook, you know, the whole thing is artifice. It's all very artificial. But, you know, there have been some really, really smart engineers who have created some absolute, to quote Klaus Hein, masterworks of technology. And so, yeah, it is possible to have a microphone that picks things up and does not add a lot of harmonic distortion and amplify that and process that and record it in such a way that when you hear the image coming out of a speaker, of a high quality speaker in a you know, a well designed acoustic environment, there's, you know, to me, that's kind of spiritual. There's a spiritual quality to audio that is super directed at cleanliness and low noise. And so when you start introducing artifice into an otherwise pristine system, for at least for me at this point in my life, having trained my ear for decades, I am absolutely distracted by that. I regularly have the experience when working with clients of hearing something in the track that the client does not hear, a spurious noise or some sort of problem for me, and where I have to point it out to them. And it's what I want to be able to do is to be able to listen to a recording and not be distracted by anything at all. I want to hear the music and I want to be carried away by the music and I want to be, you know, sucked into the artistic presentation that the artist and the producer and mixer have put together. I want to go direct. I want to be straight hooked up to that tap instead of thinking about how it could be better. You know what I'm saying?
Hey, Bruce, what's your current monitoring situation? How are you listening to music in these examples?
Okay, I am so very fortunate to have had good luck in the California real estate market as a younger person. I mean, I bought my first place when I was 32 years old. And so I have been lucky to be able to purchase a property that had a second building on it that I was able to convert to a studio. I had worked in studios designed by Michael Blackmer and adored the imaging in the rooms that he had designed. So I hired him to design my studio, and I went shopping for monitors that sounded good to me. I came up with Dynaudio Acoustics BM5As, which I'm still using. I use them with an InfraSub 18 subwoofer. So in other words, I hand-selected my monitors. I hand-selected the acoustician who designed the room that I work in, and I have a very disciplined approach to the levels at which I monitor and the position in which I monitor. So it's all very much intentional and, you know, to my taste.
Do you use any secondary monitors, and do you use headphones?
I do use both. I flailed around for quite a long time until I found a secondary monitor that sounded decent to me. I owned some of those miniature Genelex for a while, and they just never did it for me because I wanted something that I could listen at a very low volume. Being mindful of the Fletcher Munson curve, I wanted to have a speaker that was very efficient at a very low level. And what I chose for that was, surprisingly, the Alesis M1 Active 320 USB speakers. Mm-hmm. They're entirely inexpensive, and I think they sound good for what I use them for. And then I am currently, my favorite headphones are either Audio-Technica ATH-M 50s or Beyerdynamic, I think that's HD-330. I don't remember the model name off the top of my head.
Do you spend much time using headphones when you're mixing?
No. No, because unfortunately, headphones, for me, the thing that I like headphones for is for spatial imaging and for, kind of not being surprised by panning choices, because mm-hmm. pan is ultra demonstrable in headphones. But because I have a very symmetrical and finely tuned control room, you know, the problem with headphones is sound pressure level. I mean, I actually notice pitch shift when I put headphones on, mm-hmm. unless I'm listening at a very, 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 very low level. I don't think it's an absolutely accurate way to listen. Also, bass response is, you know, the whole Fletcher Munson thing is just thrown out of whack when you put headphones on.
Do you ever use headphones just for quality control, for hearing pops and clicks and microscopic analysis?
There again, I have a machine room, so my control room is dead quiet. But I mean, especially if you were in a situation where you had fan noise to contend with, or disc noise or whatever, yeah, that would be a brilliant way to scour for problems.